Mudball. Mudball!
Oh, Mudball. Look at that. Gosh, Mudball. 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 Again.
What's up? It's good afternoon. And to our listeners, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good night. All across the world, 24 time zones. We got people tuning in from everywhere. So we want to be fully accommodating, but I digress. Mr. Simas, good to be here. We're talking house theory. This is a topic that we've wanted to get on this one for quite a while. And you decided to come up with the topic this week. How about you set the table for us?
The house theory has been subject for discussion for a long time. I think it is part of the giant book that is game theory, which we've sort of reprocessed a little bit into. There's so many little games in the world, and I think we like to look at things and put them into little boxes. And so I think house theory has really been a way to express the way that we feel on a golf course when you travel from place to place. I guess the easiest way to describe it would be, it really is no fun to me trying to rank golf courses that are so incredibly different place to place, especially great ones. Like golf courses, there are so many great houses out there, and just because one is better than the other, or in a different location than the other, or has a different vibe or feel than the other, it doesn't mean that you're dealing with something that is just superior. So house theory really is something, it's the way that we talk about how a golf course feels when you play it. Does that sound right to you?
Well, early in the process there, I wasn't completely picking up on how you're describing it. However, you completely tied it together there towards the end of saying the house theory has to do with a course's sense of place. And we'll get there, but a particular house is one particular hole. A course is a collection of houses, a small neighborhood, if you will, typically of 18 particular houses. Maybe it's a cul-de-sac, a large cul-de-sac of houses. But anyway, you made a perfect transition there on why are we trying to compare Cypress Point with Shinnecock? Similarly, why would you try to compare California Mission style architecture with East Hampton?
Scandinavian design. Makes no sense. Whatever
it is. We're not going to do that. However, what we can do is rank out, okay, how does this house fit the locale? How do the materials fit where it's set? How does the furniture fit within the house? How does the size of the house fit with the other houses where it is? How does everything work? Is it all in synergy? That's the house theory. A great golf course is a collection of houses that don't necessarily in and of themselves have to fit perfectly. In fact, a terrible housing structure or a terrible housing situation would be one of these new sorts of developments where every house is the same. It's absolutely disgusting. Think of a golf course like that where it's just perfect uniformity. No one wants that.
It's horrible.
So a great collection of houses is when you actually have very differing houses with good synergies between them, but each individual house, each individual whole works with itself just as it should. That is the house theory.
I agree with you. I think we do come at this from, I think we have some different things to share relative to the house theory too. There's so many ways to go with this, but it's also how you perceive the house. You know how most of the homes that you see in your life, you never get the chance to go inside. You perceive them only from afar, right? And then you go to dinner parties and you go to your friends' houses and you go to your parents' friends' houses. And as you travel, you get to go in different Airbnbs, and over the course of your life, you get to go in a variety of different homes. But there is a difference between observing a house from afar, going in it maybe for a night or a couple nights or just a dinner, or living in that house. Because in those three different scenarios, you get a totally different story. You get the chance to, if you're looking at it from afar, you get the chance to simply observe what it looks like.
Admire.
When you admire, guess, you get
admire
to
the architecture, admire the outside presentation, but you're not necessarily looking to fully engross yourself in the feel.
Exactly. And then if you go for a dinner party, or you go for a podcast, maybe, or just to visit friends, or you stay in an Airbnb for two nights, you get the chance to live in it, to settle in, to understand it a little better, to understand how the rooms flow and what the architect was trying to do with the house. Maybe when you live in it for a little bit, you understand why it fits with the family that lives there, or maybe it doesn't. And then when you live in a place for a long time, you get to know every nook and cranny, everything about it. You kind of pave your own pathways through the house, and some things you wish were totally different. You wish you could rip a few walls down and create a new hallway, or this one little gadget annoys you so much. Or you create solutions to problems that really tick you off. And so I really feel strongly about this, and that golf courses are like this. You know, people talk about St. Andrews and that you have to play St. Andrews, 100 times before you can really have an opinion that matters on it.
Correct.
That's a home. So there are multiple ways to look at house theory, but where do you want to start?
Well, that was a good global view, and the difference between, to relate it more to golf courses and maybe bring people into this and stop talking in our such BS sorts of ununderstandable ways, indecipherable sorts of nomenclatures. I guess what you're getting at there is there are courses that you maybe admire on TV. There are courses that you play a time or two, and there are courses that you remember at. And those differ, and the types of courses that are offered to each person depend on what your preferences are of a course. Some people want to be a member at a course that's big and long and brash and hard. Some people just want a fun, clubby sort of course that you can just go enjoy. So I think that's a very good way to start in sort of a macro view. I think where I would like to go is to start to bake it down a little bit more to the neighborhood versus house theory, in that a golf course is simply a collection of houses. Each hole is a house in and of itself. And if it's a good one, the houses will differ. However, each individual house will work perfectly with itself. So let's start here. And I'd like for this to become an interactive episode of sorts, where all of our listeners are going to think about, okay, what are some of my favorite courses? What are some of my favorite holes? And can I imagine some of these things that we're talking about? Does this make sense for this hole in that course? Does that make sense? So let's imagine a given course where the first hole is a 500-yard par four. The first sorts of boxes that I'm looking for in that being a good hole are: how big is the fairway? How does the hole move? How large is the green? Which side of the hole am I looking to be on? Those things need to work in synergy. So let's say it's a slight dogleg to the left. You probably should have a better angle into the green if you're up the right side of the hole, correct?
Not necessarily, but yes, let's just use the right side for now.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate you really supporting my opinion there. Anyway, let's assume that you're better off up the right side of the hole. If that's the case,
you asked for the truth. I'm giving it.
If that's the case, the green needs to be angled in such a way that you're given an advantage by being up the right side of the hole.
There you go.
Similarly, if the hole's 500 yards, this green better not be tiny. Okay. If you have a 4-iron in your hand, you need to be given a pretty decent target. It would be like you have a little mom and pop cabin in the woods, and all of a sudden the living room is like 80% of the house. That's not what it's meant for. It's a nice little kitchen, a couple bedrooms, a cozy living room, a fireplace. That's it. If you have a 7-person family sort of house, the living room better be really big. You need a few couches. You're going to watch some shows together. You need to be able to have everyone in there in that room. So that's our first hole. The second hole is a 370-yard par four. Very, very different hole. So now all of a sudden, you're probably going to lay back a little bit off the tee. Maybe you're meant to be left with 125, 130 yards in. Okay, just a little wedge shot. Would it make any sense to have a massive flat green if you have a little wedge in your hand? Or would you want something smaller, more segmented, to where it's asking specific questions of you that matches the intimacy of the overall length of the hole and the sorts of clubs that you're going to hit?
That's exactly right.
So those two holes at a very, very high level to me describe the house theory and how when I evaluate a course, I like to go play, see how I enjoyed it, how was the company, blah, 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 what are the conditions like? And that we'll get in there. This is a very nested conversation. The conditions are kind of the final, I would say that's the furniture of how that all aligns. But again, we'll get there. But it's the very high level. Okay, how wide was this hole based on the length? How large was the green? How difficult was it around the green? That's another thing that goes into the length. If it's a small green on a short little hole, if you miss that shot with a wedge, you should be penalized to me much more heavily than you should be when you have a 4-iron in your hand. That 4-iron's probably going to be further away from the hole to begin with. If you miss it, you might miss by 20, 30 yards with a 4-iron. Whereas I hope with a wedge, you're only going to miss by 20, 30 feet. So you should be penalized more heavily if you miss and you're only 20, 30 feet from the hole. So that's where I'll start us off with house theory. Where would you like to take it from there?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just
continue upon that. We're painting a picture here. So those are my broad strokes. Now you go on, pick a different color and continue to fill in this beautiful picture that we're painting of, let's just say, a house.
Well, when you're building a golf hole, it would be very similar to how you would build a house. So different rooms in a house have different purposes. And whoever's going to be living in that house, for instance, the purpose of that given hole matters. So for the opener hole, which you talked about earlier, let's talk about what the opening hole is supposed to do. It's a handshake. You're supposed to have a relatively easy drive into a fairly wide area in which there is a good side and a bad side. It allows you one singular shot to get comfortable, and then it gives you options. The first hole should be, it should look pretty simple, and it should, the green should have some slight nuance to it. Plenty of room around to allow you to make your 4 or 5, whatever the par of the hole is. And then moving on from that hole, it should really be a little bit more nuanced for number 2 and 3 and so on. And so the purpose of the hole, the family, if you will, that's going to live in each home, dictates what each hole is. And so there is kind of like a synergy. I really like your point. There's not too much that needs to be expanded upon that, other than the neighborhood needs to have a decent amount of variety, but over the course of 18 holes, it does need to make sense. I mean, you can't have
it all fit together,
right? You can't have, you know, 15 or 20 different types of architecture pieced throughout each of these homes on the street. They all need to have,
because then you just become that family that everybody hates when you design a house that doesn't fit within the rest of the neighborhood. They look at the Simuses and say, what is this trash house that they put in here as the 14th house on the golf course? That just, it doesn't work with the rest of the neighborhood, and everyone gets all pissy about it. And then they have to go to the HOA, and it just is a whole disaster.
Yeah. And then you could even get into the signature hole argument. You know, why is there some
favorite?
Why is there some grandiose hole and all the rest aren't spoken about? It's like that's never made sense to me either. So
it's like certain communities will have a square footage cap. You can't build a house over 5 or 6,000 square feet in certain places, because then it wouldn't fit. If you have a bunch of houses that are nice, 2,500 to 4,500 square foot places, and then someone says, yeah, I'm going to come and build a 9,000 square foot house, it doesn't fit with the rest of the neighborhood. And so that's where that comes from.
Yeah. And just working with nature, I think, is a really big part of this, you know, and this is the same with building homes as it is building golf courses. The best homes really use some part of the site as a focal point for how the home fits around it or integrates within it. And each golf hole should tell a little bit of that story as well.
They adapt to the site itself rather than trying to change the site altogether.
I'm not saying that you can and will make a bad house if you completely just zero level your lot and start by, you know, pouring footers, you know, like that. By definition, you're not necessarily going to create a bad house or a bad golf hole, but the best homes and the best golf holes were given something, and then they just took that and massaged it into something that is special by definition because it was already there. You didn't have to create it.
Is it time for our favorite shout out?
Send it.
Do it.
Now I'm gonna shout out. I'm gonna leave this to you.
The Foz.
Foz is actually on my list of golf courses that I hope to speak about today. Hudson National. Can we talk about Hudson for a little bit? Hudson, yeah,
should we do an ad read first?
I mean, we can later if you want.
Yeah, we don't have any fucking ad reads. Go ahead. Hudson National.
Oh, boy. Foz's work at Hudson National troubles me so much because everyone knows that one home where from the outside it really looks not only fine, but great. And you walk inside and you go, oh, boy, this is a disaster. Oh boy, this was not what I thought it was going
to
be.
Like, wow, what a nice place. They spent a lot of money on it. I'm sure it's an awesome place to live. Who the fuck chose that couch?
What an
amazing, a 40-inch TV in that living room? Like, what? Who made that decision?
And it goes
back to...
Who
painted this room?
Yeah, it's mowing lines that make my head spin. It's like you're just missing the easy stuff. I don't know how else to say it. Talk about
and it's like it can be so frustrating.
Site.
I mean, a hole that I will never be. And here, let's start here before we get too deep in. Hudson National is a really good golf course. It's really, really good. But it's a really, really, really good site for a golf course, and the course should be better. So that to me is what really frustrates me. It's not like you go and play some bad golf course on a terrible site and you're like, man, that sucks. Well, they just weren't working with a whole lot. Could they have done better? Sure. You can always do better. But it's when you squander just an unbelievable piece of property and spend a ton of money while doing so that the frustration comes. And so what really gets me with Hudson is there are a handful of holes. I think it's the fifth that always comes to me. It's that one that's like down the hill to the right with the tiny fairway.
Yeah.
Like you can't not build a good golf hole there. It's the hole is already there. All you have to do is mow the fairway down, create the proper size and angled green, have a little bit of intrigue to the green. You're there. What does he do? He like slices into the side of the hill, probably spent like a month moving dirt to create some tiny little fairway, and then freaking angled the green in the complete wrong direction for the way that the slope presents it. And so I'm just like, what are we doing?
The green
we just spent all this time and money to screw it up. It's like, let's renovate our house when it was already great. And now it looks terrible. And we just spent a ton of money while doing so. Mm-hmm. And it's just blatantly obvious.
Yeah. It would be like building a house on the top of a mountain, but putting it on the one portion of the mountain that had no view. That is to me what Hudson National kind of is like just doing 99% of the work to not have the whole thing pay off. And sometimes 200% of the work. So, you know, but for every course that we could just knock, there are some really incredible ones. Like, have you ever had a course surprise you where it's the type of house from the outside, you could really just walk right by it, but you go inside and you go, wow, this is a home. I mean, this, the rooms flow together nicely. Every place I stand or sit, I can tell that someone thought about this. Every, you know, it goes down to like, where's the toilet paper? Or, you know, when I sit down, I have a place to put my drink. Or when I'm in the kitchen, the all my utensils and my bowls and my cutlery, like all of that is exactly where I need it. The fridge is properly placed. Those are the things that make a house a home.
So let me put a few specific words behind that. I think what we're getting at this point is there's exterior decor. There's interior decor. And there's ergonomics.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a house. The outside, that to me is the easy part. It's not that hard to make a house look good from the outside, and it doesn't have to look amazing necessarily. When you go in, the interior decor and the layout of it, it needs to make sense. Doesn't have to be completely perfect, but it needs to make sense. But what really gets down to its livability, its playability, is the ergonomics of the house. All of those little details that you talk about there, it all needs to work. And that's, as we were discussing earlier, where to me, the truly great courses separate themselves in that the way the course is presented, the way the ball plays, the way the greens roll, just the overall preparation, the mowing lines, all of those sorts of little details, it just all fits so nicely. And those are the courses that aren't just good to look at. They're not just good to play. They just, everything about them just flows and works. And they have such a great sense of place in terms of where they are. Nothing is forced or overdone. And it just, when you're playing them, the shots that you're hitting, they just feel right. And to me, all of those sorts of little details working together is what makes great courses great and great houses great.
And
it wasn't my best effort at putting that all together, but it's the small, intricate details of the playing conditions that make a great course great, just as the small details of the house are what make the house great. It's not enough to just have a really cool kitchen. The way that the stoves operate, if you want to make a bunch of omelets, you need to have a griddle. If you are a real chef, you better have cast iron. It's those sorts of little details that make it what it is.
Ergonomics is really good. It's not the full picture, though. Think about all your things. Ergonomics, you have your accessories, and you really have your cornerstones, like your strong pieces, the things that are largely immovable in a house. They're part of the structure. So if you put those three together, you get the flow of the house, which is like both what it is and how you use it. And if the flow is good, then that's where the money is. Like, that's when you can live in a house and enjoy it. You can use it a number of different ways, just like you can play a golf hole a number of different ways. But the way it's set up is for you to play it how it was intended to play it.
So before we put a bow on it here, let's each call out, without going into too great of detail, because we've already gone into pretty good detail here and have probably lost a lot of people. Let's each call out one course in particular that really works. It's just a great collection of houses, 18 of them. You first.
Kingston Heath. Yourself?
Well, give me a little background on Kingston Heath. Nothing crazy, but what about it? What about that collection of houses makes it so good?
Kingston Heath is like a rumpled napkin. That's what the ground looks like. It's on a flat table, but it has these small little rumples in it that give it so much character. And not one rumple in the napkin or in that piece of ground isn't used. They take advantage of every hump and bump in that place, and it feels as if it has been there forever. I mean, it just feels so solidified, and it's honestly good. It doesn't have to wow you with incredible landscaping or flower beds or water features. It just wows you with really simple but elegant bunkering, really intelligent architecture that's efficient. It's not so extra. It's very clearly laid out. You play it the way it was designed, and it challenges you to cheat that design, but you only have to disobey it a few times before you learn to respect it. And it's the kind of course where you can benefit from what feels like 10,000 rounds played in only a couple. And I think you may need more than one there to really understand how great it is. But it does not take long to understand how solidified it is as a really impressive golf course. And that's why I like that. Kingston Heath.
So I'm going to take it international as well. I remember the first time I played a certain course in New Jersey that has garnered a fairly high ranking over the years. We're not giving any free ads. Doesn't matter what it is out here. Well, I guess you just gave one, but anyway, first time I played again at this course that we'll go unnamed, I remember saying to you, it's the greatest collection of houses in the world. Long holes, short holes, all the little things, the small details and the large details are what make it so great. So naturally I would go there. However, I'm going to go back a little bit on what you were discussing about. They're different kinds of houses. They're ones that you are going to live in. They're ones that you're only going to see from the outside. And then they're ones that you might go to a dinner party at. This is more of a dinner party sort of house where, and it's not something that necessarily will be described with a house per se, but you know, when you're told you're going to love something and you don't necessarily need to be told why, it's just like, you're going to really like it. Just trust me on this one. You're going to really like this restaurant. Everything about it flows, you know, the plates are great, and the, you know, the way that they serve the water, the waiters just know what they're doing, the menu, the font that they use. So if you compare that same sort of description to a house, imagine going to a dinner party at someone's house, the way that the kitchen flows, the seats that you sit in, the synergies between the kitchen and the grill outside, and the place that they have the cooler set, and all of those sorts of little things, they work. This is a course that I imagine in that sort of regard as we compare it to the house theory. This is Muirfield, the Honorable Company of Edinburgh Golfers in, where is it? Edinburgh? Scotland? A little bit outside Edinburgh. The thing that's so cool about Muirfield is you go and in the morning you play four ball. So you get to play your own ball. And in the afternoon, where you really get the key to Muirfield, where you really unlock the place, is where you play foursomes. And again, this is where you don't necessarily know why you're going to like it so much or why it's going to feel so good. But after about two or three holes, it all starts to make sense that when you play foursomes, obviously you're only hitting off of the tee on every other hole. And it wouldn't make sense in that case if you went from the green back to every tee, because half the time you're hitting your first shot on a hole from the fairway, your partner is hitting from the tee. The way Muirfield does it, being a Scottish links, obviously they have fescue everywhere. Everyone's at the green, and then they have two paths cut. One path through the fescue goes back to the tee for player A, and one path is cut directly from the green to the fairway for player B. And so the way that the round flows is just something that you've never experienced before, where so you walk off the first hole, that was your tee ball. So that means on the second hole, you'll just be hitting from the fairway. And rather than walking back to the left to go to the tee, you walk forward and to the right directly to the fairway. You get to the ball, you hit your shot. And right as you hit your shot and you look back, your partner's walking to you because the whole round just flows so smoothly. You literally play in like 2 hours and 15 minutes. It's just, it's incredible. And so that's where, you know, you just let the round, the course, you let it all come to you. Nothing has to be forced. It's just so, it's so natural and so simple. And it just works so beautifully. It's the kind of house that you would love to live in, but know you're never going to. But the approachability is something that is truly remarkable and admirable.
That's really, really solid. I remember when you came back from that trip, and it feels odd because I don't think any of us romanticize playing foursomes. We want to hit our own golf balls, but for some reason that is a cherished round in the golf world, and for good reason.
Once you've played it there and you feel that flow, the way that they've laid that thing out, you'll never think of foursomes the same, because I totally agree. Like I wouldn't say I was purely against foursomes necessarily before playing at Muirfield, but it was not something that I got necessarily fired up about. I'm like, this is a little bit odd. But you go play it and you get to see the course. And the thing that's so incredible is you play it in the morning and everyone's going back to every tee. And so you don't even necessarily see that second set of paths.
Uh-huh.
But then once you understand it, it's just like, it's this complete unlock to the golf course. And it is truly remarkable. It's really, really special.
On a side note, I would liken that to if you got to play it in the reverse order.
Mm-hmm.
You get to know the golf course in a way that no one else would get to know the golf course had they been playing every shot.
That's right.
You get to see parts of it that you would never walk otherwise. And one of the things that was so cool about getting to build a golf course was that you just get to walk everywhere, even though you know no one will ever walk there on the golf course. And when you feel like you get to know a piece of land, I think you're more tied to it. And that may be some of what is so cool about Muirfield, that experience.